One good thing you've pointed out is the way it could democratize education. Hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, years ago, if you weren't, let's say you were in high school and you wanted to take a class, an AP class in Russian literature, you either had to go to a big public school or a very good private school. Now you can get almost everything online. So regardless of your financial circumstances or where you are geographically, if you're in rural mm-hmm. Kansas, you know, I have a small high school. I might want to take a class in electrical engineering or African art. I can go right on Khan Academy.
You got on recently and did a class on algebra to help one of your kids.
I did. So, you know, to help one of my sons, my high school son, with his algebra homework, you forget that. So I went on Khan Academy and brushed up. It was great.
It helped.
It helped a lot.
Yeah. And this is really going to change. I mean, but the potential here is just fascinating to me.
It is. But, you know, there's also a downside to it. And some would argue that it's creating potentially another digital divide. Actually, when my last year at Sprint, we worked with the administration on a program called Connect Ed, because with all of this education available online, a lot of kids don't have tablets. Or let's say there might be connection at school. They go home, they don't have a data plan. They don't have high-speed internet at home. They might not have a wireless device. So you want to make sure that doesn't happen either.
You hear a lot about the digital divide. Is it being addressed at the pace you think it should be addressed?
It's never fast enough, but I think it is being addressed. And of course, you know, communication technology gets less and less expensive all the time, and it gets mm-hmm. to be higher and higher on people's priority lists. So wireless penetration, that's a good example. You go to the developing world where people are really poor. The one thing they have is a cell phone. The wireless phone is the most rapidly adopted technology in the history of humankind.
Hmm.
But, you know, on the educational front, you know, there are also some areas that we have to pay attention to. So cyberbullying, texting. Some people would say the quality of the written and the spoken word is going down. There's not as much communication and discourse. You go to a school cafeteria and the students aren't having a conversation. They're on their cell phones. Texting mm-hmm. one another. I mean, if I want to talk to my sons or know what's going on, I typically text them. Mm-hmm. I don't call them. There was a study done of the grammar that teens use, and I think 64% of texts use improper grammar.
I've seen that a lot in communication studies, 303 WI. I teach up on the Hill here at UMKC, Introduction to Journalism. You see it with alarming frequency these days, Dan.
You do. And, you know, there's other things that we just have to pay attention to. I was watching a CNN show with Anderson Cooper, and it was on these 12-year-olds, I believe, and their addiction to their cell phones and how miserable they were when you took it away. And there's a new word called FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. And
wow.
it's a big deal where kids feel they need to be checking what's being said about them and their friends, or something will happen that they don't know about. And it's become a bit of an addiction. So there are a lot of very positive things. The democratization of education, the amount of information that's out there, being able mm-hmm. to search on anything, very, very positive. But we have to pay attention to how it's really changing, actually, even the wiring, if you will,
yeah.
that our kids have.
What about that notion? You've got young kids. I've got young kids. I mean, what about this whole idea of how much time they spend on the phone? I've never heard that phrase FOMO before, but that's clearly a dynamic out there that I've seen a million times with my own boys. What about that? What do we do about that?
Well, I think you have to try to, and it's hard to do, you know, limit the time that your sons and daughters spend on. And I know, good luck. It's just something I think we need to be vigilant about. But to mention wiring, the young generation is growing up a little bit differently, even as people. And there's some positives and there's some negatives. On the positive side, they're multitaskers.
Yeah.
I mean, you take young people, they can't like watch TV without also doing something else at the same time.
I find myself in sort of that same thing. I don't want to sit and watch a baseball game. I'll be reading the New York Times while I'm doing it. And it's I've noticed a change in myself.
Yep. And they've known nothing else. So from the time they were little, they are always multitasking, which is great. It's a great skill, great ability to have. But on the downside, studies have shown the generation doesn't have as much patience. They need instant gratification, perhaps not as much deep thought reflection. You know, so there's pluses and minuses. I think many more positives than negatives, but, you know, there's no free lunch.
And maybe bottom line with all this is we really don't know what the impact of all this screen time is going to be. We've done shows on it here on Up to Date. We don't know what the impact is for sure. You talk about this changing dynamic, but where it's headed, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But I think, you know, generally, I think it improves people's lives in many ways. Studies have shown that, like in developing countries, for each 10 percentage points in penetration, so if you go from 60% to 70% of the population having a cell phone, it adds a half a point to GDP growth. So GDP That's might go from 2 to 2.5%. Very good for the economy. Studies have been done in the U.S. that 1.5 trillion of GDP will be contributed to the U.S. economy over the next 10 years because, you know, because of wireless. As someone who's getting older, I'm really looking forward, I have to admit, to a lot of elements of getting older because of this technology. Smart appliances, self-driving cars, personalized robots, which all use the mobile internet. All of this information about me using big data, smart algorithms, artificial intelligence, you know, robotics. It's a pretty exciting world where I can likely live in my home, plus social media and communication with the outside world, text to speech, speech to text. So if I start losing my sight, I can hear it rather than have to read it. And the other way around, if it's hearing, I think it's going to improve the quality of life for the aging generation very significantly.
Time magazine's cover story this week on driverless cars. You know, clearly a new frontier for so many of us.
It is, and they're coming. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, just like Uber is, which is basically a mobile app, Uber is revolutionizing transportation. And we were talking about electric cars earlier. You know, we're going to have driverless cars, and I think that's a good thing.
What about this next generation of wireless data that's coming down the pike too, Dan? 5G, what is it, and how is that going to change our lives?
Well, it means that data is just going to move faster and faster and become more economical. Generally, there's a half of an order of magnitude improvement in price performance with each G. So Gs are generations. A lot of people don't know that. 1G was analog. 2G was digital when you had things like CDMA and GSM and when you started to get text messages. 3G was when the browsers went into the phones, the first iPhone, where at least networks were fast enough to browse, but not really fast enough, especially if you had data. I mean, lots of data and video. 4G, which is the state of the art now, was the first wireless networks that were fast enough to support data like YouTube. You can watch videos on your cell phone. 3G, you really can't. You need that 4G signal. 5G is just that much faster, like HD video, 4K video. Over networks.
And how far away are we from getting it?
Well, it's hard to say because the investments have just been made in 4G and wireless carriers are putting 4G networks in, and there hasn't been an accepted standard yet in 5G. You know, there's 5G technologies being studied and tried. I think about 3 years away, you'll start seeing 5G networks go in.
Because the demand for speed, as you would know as well as anyone on the planet, is just incredible, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and it's insatiable. And also they use spectrum more efficiently. Each generation gets, if you will, more, to use a wireless frame, more bits per hertz. So in a given amount of air, you know, there's spectrum. So there's this many, you know, this much frequency. With each generation, I can get more stuff through that air, you know, and that's important as well, because what's really driving the usage on wireless networks now is video. And video is reshaping advertising. It's reshaping, you know, so much on mobile networks, and that's why 5G is necessary.
Let's do this, Dan. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here with former Sprint CEO Dan Hesse. We're going to turn to cybersecurity, which is a threat to all of this new advances that Dan's talking about. We're also going to talk about music quality and Dan's relationship with a guy named Neil Young. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR.